Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast. Online and on the air, my name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we are going back to school. I know, we thought this day would never come, and it surprised me as well. Sure, the mosquitoes were bad and the outside world was humid and sticky, but summer was a pretty good deal. Well, now it's finally time to stop tanning at the beach, go into the cabin, and, well, doing nothing. And to better prepare you for school on Tuesday, we have words of wisdom concerning buying textbooks and riding your bike around campus. We also hear the word on the street with Patrick Sharkey and Radio K's weekly release spotlight. And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. As I'm sure you're all aware, the cost of college tuition has been skyrocketing for decades. But in 2012, the think tank American Enterprise Institute reported that the cost of college textbooks has increased by 812% since 1978. Zoe Peterson reports on how this nauseating increase impacts students here at the University of Minnesota.
Is over. In less than 48 hours, we return to the bittersweet regimentation that is school. As part of getting ready for class, many of us have to muster up the strength to deal with the sticker shock of our textbooks, the required reading that, according to the American Enterprise Institute, is rising in price faster than tuition, healthcare, housing, and inflation.
You have to, wonder why college textbook prices are going up, and it can't be that the cost of publishing is going up because we see that the recreational book prices are actually falling.
That's Mark Perry, professor of economics at the University of Michigan, Flint, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and creator of the Carpe Diem blog. He offered a few possible answers to his own question.
One theory is that there's been a lot of consolidation in the industry, and so whereas there in the past might have been 15 or 20 publishers competing for that big market, now there's only three or four.
Beyond that, he says that the textbook market doesn't operate by standard market principles in the sense that there's no competition. Once a professor assigns a textbook, there's no alternatives. And with publishers printing new editions with minor changes every couple of years, the resale value of textbooks is lost. Despite the Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 that requires publishers to disclose the price of textbooks to professors when marketing their product, Professor Perry says that most instructors have no idea how much required materials will cost their students.
And it's often the case that professors are insulated from the cost of the book to the students because as professors, we deal with the textbook representatives and not necessarily really the bookstore. So when we're selecting a book or getting information on a new edition of a book, usually the price is never discussed.
Public Interest Research Group put out a report early this year analyzing how students have reacted to the ultra-expensive textbook norm. There were three major findings. First, the high cost of textbooks can deter students from buying required materials, as it did with recent University of Minnesota graduate Robert Andrade.
Sometimes you'd have to make decisions on what books they wouldn't buy, something you'd like maybe have to rent them from the library or borrow them or just not read them if, you couldn't make it work.
Were you worried that it would affect your grades?
Yeah, but you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
The PIRG report also found that the rising cost of textbooks affected how many or which courses a student took, and that 82% of the students surveyed felt that they would do better in a course if there were a textbook available for free online. Irene Duranzik is an associate professor at the University of Minnesota's College of Education and Human Development. She's one of the many faculty members spearheading the U of M's Open Textbook Library, a free textbook library available to the public. She's been using open source textbooks for the past several semesters in her statistics class.
As far as student accessibility, it was great because many students at the beginning of the semester are either waiting for a check from home, for their financial aid to come through, or their first paycheck to come. And they put a priority list of what they need to get and what they could wait for, and oftentimes textbooks get put down the list.
So we have to wonder, did offering a free alternative yield better results in her class?
No, I think it took away excuses, but I didn't notice any real difference in grades, no. I noticed students were happier and didn't have some of the fretting that they have when they don't have access to materials.
So here's what Robert Andrade suggests.
You can get an older copy, you can go to the library, or you can look online, hopefully for PDF. Probably about a quarter of the time, you'd be able to find something online.
I'm Zoe Peterson.
Hey everybody, Patrick Sharkey here once again to bring you a brief rundown of some of the cooler shows that are happening in the Twin Cities this week in a segment that we like to call Word on the Street. Word on the street is that D'Angelo is playing tonight in the main room at First Ave. Tickets were $60, and I say were because the show has been sold out for quite some time. Plus, after the set, Questlove is doing a DJ set, so basically, whatever you end up doing tonight, just know that there's something a lot cooler going on downtown. But the whole point of this segment is to tell you about the cool shows that you can actually attend. And lucky for you, word on the street is that Michael Cronin is playing at the Turf Club to celebrate the release of his latest record, MC3, this Thursday, September 10th. Tickets are only $12, so you really don't have a reason not to attend. And if you're still on the fence, take a listen to part of his song, Turn Around, and see for yourself. I'll admit it, I'd never been a big fan of this next artist, and I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for promoting this show, but seriously, Taylor Swift is great. As I'm sure you're well aware, her latest album, 1989, has consumed the airwaves of popular radio stations across the country, and some of those songs are so damn catchy, there's just no point in trying to fight it. Plus, apparently she's going to be Kanye West's running mate in 2020, so buckle up for that. She's hosting a 3-day residency this weekend at the XL Energy Center, and if you can, I'd try to snag some tickets. Here's a song you've probably never heard. But let's say T-Swift isn't your thing. Perhaps a local band will catch your heart? Hennepin County Millionaires Club, a 7-piece band based out of, you guessed it, Hennepin County, is playing at the Ice House this Friday, September 11th. The band is working on finishing their second album as we speak, and I think we can all expect some pretty cool things to come out of this band. They've got a sax, a trombone, trumpets, all your 2D instruments. Tickets are $8 in advance, $10 at the door, and the show starts at 10:30. Well, that's all for me this week. You can find out more about all these shows and much, much more over at RadioK.org. I'm Patrick Sharkey, and as always, thanks for stopping by. That's why I'm not ready to say bye to you.
If I were to ask any U of M student how they get around campus, the answer I would expect to hear is by bike. It is easy, cheap, efficient, but it comes with its own risks. Bike theft affects many students on and off campus, and I look to citizens and law enforcement for answers on why this is happening and what we can do to prevent it.
It was sitting on my porch, and it had been raining that day, so I decided, I'm not gonna bring my bike inside. It's all wet and gross. I'm just gonna leave it on the porch, but I'll lock it to itself. And I'd been doing that quite a bit, and I'd had great luck with it. And I went to a friend's house. I was gone for 4 hours and came back and it was gone, so.
This is a story told far too often by the U of M students and Twin Cities residents alike. Within the metro area, as much as $40,000 worth of bicycles were stolen this summer alone. And unfortunately, Radio K's engineer Jack Jensen's bike was just one drop in the bucket. With such a large campus and surrounding community, biking is practically essential. Minneapolis wears its most bike-friendly city acclamation like a badge of honor, and rightfully so. But with so many cyclists taking advantage of the city's resources, so many bikes are up for grabs. To find out more, I spoke to Deputy Chief of the University of Minnesota Police Department, Chuck Miner, who has been a member of the force for almost 20 years.
In general, we hear that they feel safe on campus, and in fact, students are safe on campus. The crimes that students are most concerned about, of course, are robberies, physical assaults. Are still very, very rare, extremely rare on campus. Theft has always been our number one crime at the university, and that's dropped from the neighborhood of 1,400 per year in the late 1980s to just 400 range last year.
And Miner reckons that the department's incorporation of technology has been the biggest factor in reducing those startling statistics. With innovations like trespass warning systems, security cameras, and the bike bait program.
We have some GPS devices that we use. So if these devices are stolen, we're able to track them via a special computer system and go in and apprehend the person who stole them. We've been very successful with our bait bike program. We've made several arrests. Word is spread among thieves that the university has these bait bikes, and we are under the belief that thieves have not stopped what they're doing, but they've gone elsewhere to commit bike thefts elsewhere other than the University of Minnesota. So we feel there's been great success in that area.
Even if the UMPD and the MPD work closely together, thieves moving away from campus and into the surrounding areas isn't the most comforting news to people like Jack, who live in Como, Marcy Homes, or Dinkytown. If your bike is missing, the best you can do is look for it.
I put up flyers all over my neighborhood for like 4 or 5 blocks, you know, just shouting out to anybody who happened to see it. And I didn't hear any response. I just didn't think I'd ever get it back. I was like, oh, it's over. You know, I'll just move on. I'll buy a new bike and that's that. So.
And maybe, just maybe, you'll find it.
Yeah, so months passed, and I happened to be biking home from work. And right as I passed through the intersection, I look to my right, and there's this guy. He's riding a bike, but he looks very out of character on this bike. I started to take a closer look at it, and I was like, that's a black rear wheel. It's a black frame, It has a bright red front wheel. I was like, it looks like my bike. It's really odd how much it looks like my bike. Take one more look at it, and it has this sticker on it that, like, I put on the bike. So I was not sure what to do, but then my adrenaline just took over, and I screamed at the guy, and I was like, hey you, that's my bike. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, that's my bike. Like, it got stolen 3 months ago. Pull over right now. I'm going to call the police. And he freaked out. He's like, oh my gosh, man, just, you can have it. Take it. I don't want it. Like, he was like afraid because I was just so, like, I just was yelling at him at the top of my lungs.
Jack says he feels lucky because not many people get their bikes back. If the thief had made more of an effort to change the wheels or repaint the frame or remove that sticker, he may not have been as astute. Even if you do everything right, the odds of getting your bike back is about 1 in 10. But even so, you should do everything you can. Get a U-Lock, write down your make, model, and serial numbers, opt out of buying high-end models of bikes, and above all else, be careful. This is Matt Curtis. It is now time to hear about this week's Weekly Release Spotlight, the album that we highlight every week in association with the Electric Fetus. This week is Dira Dorian's The Expanding Flower Planet. It is the debut LP from former Dirty Projectors bassist / vocalist, and it is the solo project from him. And to play us out the show, here is a track from that album. It is called Violet Minded. Thank you to Aaron Bolton, Max Fuller, Patrick Sharkey, Zoe Peterson, and Zach Simon for contributing to this week's Real College Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, RadioK.org, and on air Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening. Once again, here is Dira Dorian's Violet Minded.